The Matt Hasselbeck Show, presented by Infinity of Bellevue and Linwood. Seahawks legend Matt Hasselbeck takes you inside the Seahawks and the NFL for a full hour, exclusively on the Mike Sauk Show.
Hello, Matt. Good to have you this week.
How are we doing?
Well, it's been an odd week, I'm not going to lie, here in Seattle. A lot of excitement last night with a winter sports franchise finally here. After well over a decade. That was a blast last night.
Yeah, that was very cool. I mean, I couldn't stay up that late out here in Boston, but that was really cool to see. And, you know, hockey's huge here, so to see hockey in Seattle is really neat.
You like the uniforms? You like the bright white?
Love the cool colors. I actually am a fan of that alternate logo. Yeah. So I like the S, but that alternate, I don't want to screw it up.
The Space Needle anchor thing?
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I've got a hat coming to me with that logo. I'm excited about it.
I like when they have the serpent kind of wrap around the Space Needle logo. I think that's pretty sweet. I like the whole thing, though. I'm into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's creative, and it's awesome, and it's great that we have a franchise. Very excited.
So that's obviously the good news. The bad news is we talked to you Wednesday. The next night, Russell injures the finger. We now know what mallet finger is here in Seattle, which we didn't know before. Now what? Yeah.
Most linemen know what that means.
Oh, yeah. I bet they do. But they don't have to throw a ball. There's no way he could have played through that, right?
Well, I mean, you never know, like, until you try. And, you know, I've had injuries where you're not sure. You're like, hey, they'll ask you, hey, can you go? And you're like, I don't know. I need to give me a ball, and then I'll tell you. And then it looks like that's what he did, where it was like, hey, I'm hurt, but, I'm okay. I can do it. Probably give me a ball. And then we just saw the look on his face, and he was trying. And it's not so much a matter of pain. It's more of a matter of function. Like, does it work? And, so that was super disappointing for him to have to watch the end of that game. I feel for him for sure.
How impressive is 9+ years? I mean, all of those starts in a row. How impressive is that?
Yeah, it's really impressive. And, you know, that's one of the things I see a lot of these quarterbacks now, young guys, some older guys, you know, Lamar Jackson, you know, some of these guys that are really doing it with their arm and their legs, but they're taking a beating. And I always thought that early on, Seattle did such a great job with using Russell Wilson with the zone read game, where they would close out games. It was him and Marshawn. They would close out games, but he was not taking big hits. He'd run out of bounds. He'd get 9 yards and slide. And then so you're at least minimizing the risk a little bit, because he is going to hold the ball in the pocket and make those Houdini-type plays. But now at least the risk factor of staying healthy was lower. And it's been really, really impressive, the longevity, but not only the longevity, but also just playing at a high level.
Well, and of course, you know, he gets hurt just on a throw in the pocket, right? It's none of that that ends up injuring him for the first time in his career and causing him to miss games. It's just a regular old throw from the pocket where Aaron Donald just got a little too close and, you know, sort of a freak thing, of course.
Yeah, well, Steve Young would tell you, you know, and I used to work with him, and basically he, to me, is like one of the first really, really mobile quarterbacks. But he would tell you it is more dangerous in that pocket. Like, you're someone's rolling up on your ankle, they're rolling up on your knees, your follow through is going to hit a helmet or a bicep like Aaron Donald's, you know. It's just, like, that's where the danger is. And then, you know, when I watched Brett Favre when I was his backup for the first 3 years of my career, you know, he had the streak going, still has the streak in terms of like staying healthy or playing in games. And he would always just keep his feet moving. And he was like, it's dangerous in there. I got to keep my feet moving. And so we'd kind of make fun of him a little bit because of how active he was after he'd throw the ball. But clearly it was a good way to not get hurt. And you just kind of hope for the best and got to get a little bit fortunate.
Was there a moment with Favre, I mean, like, where he either had to tough through something crazy that you were there for to keep the streak alive, or you thought it was going to end? You know, I don't know about the crazy Cal Ripken rumors or anything like that, but like, was there a moment where you thought, oh yeah, this thing is going to not continue, but Favre found a way to make it happen?
For sure. Like, so many times. I can't even tell you how many times. We played Monday night down in Tampa, and he leaves the game, and everyone, including his wife, told me, like, hey, he's going to miss time. During the week in practice, he was in a walking boot. Friday practice, he's got a size 13 shoe on one foot, a size 15 shoe on the other, just to see if he can go. And I'm like, there's no way. There's no way I'm going to get my first start. I was, like, ready to go. I was all excited. He somehow plays in the game. plays in the game and plays amazing. He's like NFC Player of the Week. And there were other times where he was hurt and banged up, and we just happened to have a bye the next week. I mean, the level of toughness was off the charts, but also the level of just like things that just kind of came like sort of aligned so that he was able to get that extra day or get that extra week. But truly the guy was unbelievable at playing through injury, and not just playing through injury, playing really, really well through injury. That was amazing to see firsthand, up close and personal.
Well, I won't set you up for obviously getting yourself in trouble by asking who was tougher, Brett Favre or Steve Hutchinson, but we do have Hutch on the line right now, former teammate of yours, and I'm guessing one of the tougher players you ever played with.
Hey, no doubt. And Hutch can speak to Brett Favre because Hutch played with him in Minnesota. What's up, Hutch?
What's up, fellas? How we doing?
We're great. We're talking about the toughness of Brett Favre and seeing it up close and personal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing about Brett is he is one of the toughest guys I've ever played with, but he'll let you know about it, too. So if he has an injury or he's got, you know, his ankle, like, you know, like you were saying, that one day he'll show up, his ankle will be the size of a cantaloupe, and he'll show everybody in the locker room, you know, and then, but then he'll go out there and do it. So you can't really say anything. But that's Brett. He wasn't going to miss a start. He really didn't care what it took. I mean, well, you know, probably better than anybody, Matt. Like, what's the story? The game in Dallas, was it the Thanksgiving game where he literally super glued a tongue depressor to his finger or something just so he could play?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was crazy. Like, he does all kinds of stuff.
What's the worst injury that you had to play through, Hutch?
You know, I always had shoulder issues. It always seemed to be something that happened early in the season that you just kind of play through. And then I came from the school of thought where, you know, if I were to make a Pro Bowl, I was earn my way into the Pro Bowl, get voted in. I felt like I was, you know, it was an honor and I wanted to play, and probably wasn't always the smartest thing, an extra game on top of it. But clearly when I broke my leg, you can't do anything about that. But a shoulder injury, something that you'd have to get cleaned up or operated on after the season, those things kind of dragged on, you know, especially when you're making it in the postseason. And back in the day where we actually played 4 preseason games and played in a lot of the snaps, I mean, it just kind of adds up.
Well, I definitely feel like the bump in the log here. We got Steve Hutchinson joining us with Matt Hasselbeck, and, you know, I'm just me. And I appreciate you coming on with us today, Steve. The emotions last week had to be high. You talk about being honored. You were honored here in Seattle with your Hall of Fame ring. You received the ring here. I know you've been back here, I think, since you left the first time, but what was it like being in the building on Thursday night and receiving that honor?
It was great. You know, I've actually been employed by the Seahawks for the last 3 or 4 years in a scouting consulting role. So I'm back in Seattle quite often, with the exception of last year with COVID, obviously. But, you know, I'm back there 3 to 4 weeks a year for draft meetings or the end of camp or something. So I'm kind of used to being back around the facility. The stadium, though, was a different setting. As we all know, when I left Seattle after the 2005 season, you know, it's still to this day a sore subject in a lot of circles. And so for me it was important for me to go back where it all started for me and get that ring and be able to address the crowd and let them know how much it meant to me to be a part of those teams that built up to make that first Super Bowl run for Seattle. And it was special to see, you know, the crowd kind of accept it and embrace it and go cheer and all that. It was something I'd look forward to for a while.
Do you remember the first time you met Matt?
I don't remember the specific first time. I remember it was right after I got drafted. You know, we had the mini camp 2 weeks after practice, or 2 weeks after the draft, I should say. And I flew in, and I want to say I kind of met him kind of standing by the old equipment room window. I think I was trying to get, you know, my uniform or my practice gear or something. And I think he kind of came up and introduced himself. Well, I'm not mistaken, but, yeah, I mean, I, you know, there's a lot of guys I could say. I just, you know, it's funny. You see these guys, you talk to these guys, and where we've come, you know, where we started, where we are now is Robbie Toback and all these guys. But, you know, to look back and at that time in 2001, just a rookie, I know there was a lot of expectations for me, and none put on any harder than myself on myself. But it's just funny to see first full circle how close we all are, friends now, and how, you know, all the things we've been through. But I think Matt and I were in the same boat. You know, we came in, we're expected to be the guy right off the bat, and of course Matt had been in the league for 3 years, but we looked at each other like, I'm gonna try to protect you. You're gonna try to get us in the end zone, and it's just funny how far we've come.
Yeah, Hutch, I remember that first mini camp after the draft, and all the coaches like kind of were whispering to me, like, you have no idea how good this guy is. We drafted Corin Robinson and Steve Hutchinson that year in the first round, and they were just, you know, basically just gassing him up so much. So at the end of the first practice, I'm having the offense like break down, and I say, and he's a rookie, and I'm like, all right, Hutch, break us down, you know, like offense on three. And the look of sort of like disrespect I got from the older guys, Chris Gray, Robbie Toback, you know, Walter Jones, because there's a hierarchy in that O-line room. And they were like, wait, you just asked our rookie to break us down? Like, what are you doing? I got a little carried away with the scouting reports I was getting behind the scenes, I guess.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I could just see the look on Robbie's face right now. I mean, you know, Walt, who knows if Walt was even paying attention, but Robbie and Chris for sure were we're probably like, what are you doing?
You know, it's funny. Brock, I think, tells a story, and I think he's told this on the air. I hope I'm not screwing this up, Hutch, about you as a rookie and coming in and having to face, I don't know who it would have been on the defensive line, but somebody who was just, you know, who was great, and you're like, man, I don't even know whether I can do this in the NFL. And obviously you figured it out, went on to the Hall of Fame career. But do you remember those moments of sort of trepidation at the beginning?
Well, I always tell the story, and I'm sure he's probably – he might be referring to this story. So we're playing the Dolphins at UW Stadium 2001. And this is like – it was early in the season. It was October. And so they had their, you know, of course they had a really good front seven, you know. But the guy I specifically was going against was Darryl Gardner. And Darryl Gardner, if you don't remember, was literally one of the largest humans I've ever seen. And not like a big, like a Gilbert Brown large. Like, this guy was like 6'6", 6'7". He had a complete, he looked like a transformer. Like, he was like trim waist, his feet up, his back was wide. Like, this guy was like a monster. And so, in that time, Miami was playing like an even front defense, which means both guards were covered. They didn't have a traditional true nose guard over the center. Well, Robbie Toback, being the smart aleck he is, he just like, he's uncovered all day, right? So all his job is to do is kind of help out where he's needed. And pass protection, because he doesn't have a guy lined up on him. So it's towards the end of the – it was right at the end of the first quarter. We had the ball. We were down driving, quarter ends. You know, we go – both teams start walking to the other end of the field to set up for the second quarter. And Darryl Gardner goes to me, goes, hey, rookie, you keep playing. You keep playing hard. And Toback, which, if you got to know Robbie, I mean, I'm sure you guys do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Matt does, but – Robbie's going, keep playing hard. He's kicking your beef, you know? And I'm sitting there going, no, sir, I'm not. I'm just trying to do my job. Just like, don't listen to him. Like, they pay me to do this. I'm just trying to keep you away from the quarterback. And so I'm like, Robbie, shut the hell up. You're not even blocking anybody. But that's Toback. You know, that's kind of sums up our O-line group, too. I mean, we were the tightest group of any team on any group I've ever played on, that Seattle group up front. And but that's kind of how we made each other better. I mean, it was we always had a healthy competition and a healthy way of pushing each other, but we had each other's back. And those are the times, those are the stories you miss.
It's good stuff. Hutch, congratulations.
For
and
sure.
The Hall of Fame thing is obviously, there's no bigger honor for a person who played in the NFL to get that ring. And I love the idea of doing it here in Seattle. Congratulations and continue good luck.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
You're the best, Hutch. Thanks, Hutch. Love you, man.
Thanks, Matt. Talk to you.
All right, there you go. Steve Hutchinson calling right in to the Matt Hasselbeck Show. You're really just kind of moving in and setting up shop here, Matt. You just bring your friends over.
I can't take any credit for that. I just love that, though. Robbie Toback writing checks from Hutch's bank account, talking smack to the guy that he has to block all day, not the guy that Toback's blocking all day.
No, of course not.
That's really great. Yeah. It's really great. You know, Walter Jones yelled at me for that one time. I was talking smack to Joey Porter in the Super Bowl. And Joey Porter, I wasn't blocking Joey Porter all day. Walter Jones was. And he was like, hey, just please don't do that. He's just going to incite him.
Just tone it down.
I got this. Just walk away.
That group was pretty close. I've heard that before. And we've heard that from Toback. And I know Walt's talked about that. It must have been unique to be around that group of offensive linemen.
It really was great, and they're really smart guys. You know, there's always, like, these jokes about offensive linemen and, you know, like, whatever the standard jokes are. But this was the brightest group on our team. They were the most clock awareness, just X's and O's, you know, just really all of it. It was an impressive group. And to see Hutch get to come back, because he left, you know, under the poison pill situation, kind of left in sort of a bad way, and it really kind of affected us in a lot of different ways. But to see him being able to kind of come full circle and – you know, he mentioned he's doing scouting for the Seahawks now, which is great. But to do it there publicly in front of the fans, to just kind of show who he really is and how much our times together in Seattle meant was really, really cool. And, of course, the night before I wasn't able to be out there, but I'm getting like 1 a.m. FaceTimes from Max Strong and Hutch and, you know, all these guys that, you know, I don't know where they were or what they were doing, probably smoking cigars somewhere together and thinking I'm going to pick up a FaceTime at 1:30 in the morning.
No, you don't do that?
Not for them.
What does Sarah say if you do that? If you just pick up one of those 1:30 FaceTime, is she happy with that or not?
You know what? Anybody who has kids like in college, like your phone's kind of always on alert. So you get like that 1:30 a.m. call, like as a parent, like you're picking it up, but you're on call all the time as a parent. But
buddies.
when it's Max Strong, you know, that one can probably wait the next day.
Yeah. I got a texter here, Matt, who thinks I am tougher than I've given myself credit for. He says, don't downplay yourself, Salk. I'm sure you've gone on the air a couple of times with a sore throat or maybe even a little tired. So I feel like I'm sort of in that category with Russ or maybe Brett Favre.
Yeah. Does hungover count as tired? I'm asking for somebody else.
I mean, I wouldn't know. I have hungover.
You never know. Yeah.
Make any sense to me. Bring it back to Russ for a minute or two, because this is obviously, I mean, we haven't seen this since Russ got here. He's never missed a game. He's barely missed a snap since showing up here in Seattle. And let's say it is 3 weeks, which is sort of what the estimate looks like. We'll see Geno Smith for three games against first Pittsburgh, then New Orleans, and then Jacksonville. What do you think we can learn about this team, about Russell, about the offense, about Shane Waldron by not having him in there for a little while?
Yeah, well, there can be positives out of this, right? Like, because it's not like everyone else is playing all that great right now. Like, there's some people that are doing their job. There's others that are not getting it done. So this kind of brings it back into like, hey, we have to play assignment football. We can't just kind of play hero football. We can't play defense like we know. Well, Russell Wilson and DK and Tyler, they'll just, you know, they'll bail us out if we get down too much. And, you know, on offense, hey, we can't. You know, we can't get away from sort of this Pete Carroll formula that he knows, that he believes in, how this team was built. You know, run the ball, you know, take shots when they're there, make it happen. Like, there's a formula that Pete believes in. And, you know, I think that maybe they've gotten away from it a little bit at times because of the other stuff that they're talented enough to do. But this could maybe be a situation where for the next 3 weeks, hey, this team kind of, you know, gets back to fundamentals and technique and stuff like that. And then when Russell is able to come back, it's just kind of an added bonus. He's almost like he's coming back to a more talented or more effective team.
You had a couple injuries in your career, right, where you missed a few games and were forced to watch. What did you learn during that time of being forced to watch your team?
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. I would say that, number one. Like, it's incredibly frustrating. You know, the early things that I learned are different than the later things that I learned. Like, early in my career when I got hurt, I basically was watching Trent Dilfer come in. And there were certain things that happened with him. Like, I've used the example before, like second and one, under no circumstances were we ever going to throw the ball. We were going to use tempo and we were going to get a running play called. And that was kind of a Trent Dilfer, Mike Holmgren thing to sort of help the offensive line, help the offensive line have a great day, take advantage of second and one. If you get a 2 yard run on second and one, that's a success for us. That's a huge success, and it sort of helps out the O-line. Later in my career, I think I learned things more about the communication, how it's working on the sidelines between wide receiver groups and their coach, maybe running back groups and their coach, understanding how it is important to spread the ball around and get the ball, you know, get each guy feeling like they're involved in the game. You know, there was a stretch there when Bobby Engram was our just kind of our third down specialist, where he literally wouldn't even come on the field sometimes until like third down. And that was his only chance to touch the ball. But being on the sidelines, getting to see how, hey, he's just not in a rhythm. It's been 16 minutes since he's touched the football, you know, understanding things like that. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, what exactly Russ is going to learn. But I do know this. He will be leading from the sideline. He may not be under center, but he'll be helping Geno. He'll be helping the offensive line. He'll be kind of like, sometimes I call it great marinara sauce over yesterday's pasta. It's like he's going to do things that are not necessarily, you know, you can't even explain it. You just know it's super, super, super important. Mm. And so the fact that he's going to be able to be on the sidelines, I think will help the team.
Well, and it's interesting. He doesn't have to be on the sidelines, right? We've had these conversations before, like, why isn't player X on the sidelines? Why are they up in the suite or not at the game or this, that, and the other? I would assume Russell will be there on the sidelines, right?
Usually that's a safety issue. So, like, I know, like, if you've got, say, you have a torn MCL or something and you're on crutches, they don't want you on the sidelines because, you know, if a play happens on the sidelines, you can't protect yourself. That's not what we want. So I think that's usually determined by kind of a health and safety thing.
Oh, that never even dawned on me that would be the case. That makes perfect sense, and certainly with a finger he should be all right to be over there. I got to imagine this is just killing him. And I do also think if he comes back quickly, if we see him at the front end of this 3 to 4 weeks, that says something about his investment still in Seattle. And there are all these questions about whether Russ is interested in being here long term. And, you know, they're speculating on it. Greg Olsen was speculating before the game on Thursday night. If he's back in 4 weeks, I got to imagine he's still at least somewhat invested in trying to play here, right?
Well, I would imagine so. I mean, to what you do in terms of putting your body on the line each and every week, I mean, you better be all the way invested, and I believe that he is. You know, I think the other thing that's going to happen is that he's going to be in more of a coach's mode for this, you know, almost a month here. And so he and Shane will have opportunities instead of, like, he's running plays at practice and Shane's watching them and calling them. You know, Shane will be calling plays at practice, and Russell and Shane will be kind of together, sort of talking through each of these plays as they're happening, both at practice and both in games. And so, you know, like, time spent on task, I think you kind of just get more invested even, you know, that way. So it'll be really interesting to see. But I do know this. It's not like you have a little break. It's not like it's like a little vacation. It's very important to stay fit and, you know, do all the other things, train your body as if you're playing a game, because when that time is, I mean, 3 weeks sounds really early to me. I would have guessed more like 4 or 5 weeks.
Well, it's 4 weeks, 3 games is what I should have said. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
They got the bye in there. So they can go three games in 4 weeks in theory.
It's always funny how, like, coaches have such a high tolerance for their players' pain. You know, the doctor will be like, oh, it's 6 to 8 weeks. And they're like, all right, great. You'll be back in 6 weeks. It's like,
thanks.
You know, it's really
just
funny.
Just because coaches are optimists. You know that. All coaches are optimists.
Well,
sure.
And honestly, that's the best way to approach it. And I think any athlete, if a doctor tells you, hey, it's going to be 6 weeks, you're saying it's going to be 5. If he says it's 5, it's going to be 4. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the mindset that you approach rehab with.
All right, you guys know the voice. It's Matt Hasselbeck. He joins us for the whole hour every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. In 20 minutes, we're going to have him rank the most freakishly athletic players he saw here in Seattle. And why? Well, because I think we're watching an all-timer right now. We'll ask Matt about him as well. Coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show with Matt Hasselbeck here, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show, presented by Infinity of Bellevue and Linwood.
Every Wednesday from 9 to 10.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, we're rolling on here with Matt Hasselbeck. We do this every Wednesday for the entire 9 o'clock hour. So if you're just tuning in, make this a regular part of your week. 9:45, as we've done every week, Matt will rank things. I think that's been the most fun. Matt's had some really good lists. You work hard on these, man. Is this
hey, it's stressful. Hey, it's stressful, these top fives.
Of course. You don't want to leave anybody out. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Yeah. Oh, I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Okay, I don't mind that at all. I just want to make it a great list. That's all.
All right, we'll do that coming up in 15 minutes. And some of it, our list today was born out of just watching Lamar Jackson on Monday night. You're obviously working with that Monday night crew. And is he the most exciting player in the league right now to you?
Yeah, it's either him or Kyler Murray. I mean, Lamar is just at a whole nother level. We have got this thing on our Sunday NFL Countdown morning show that we call it. So the All Ridiculous Team. Teddy Bruschi came up with it, and mm-hmm. Lamar is definitely on the All Ridiculous Team. Teddy was saying, as a defender, it's kind of like when the quarterback is more elusive than your best punt returner. That's Lamar Jackson. But the problem is with Kyler right now, he's doing it in similar ways. So it's almost like there's more than one Lamar Jackson right now, and with Kyler Murray and Lamar. But Lamar has definitely been the guy that has put the team on his back and has just been taking a beating in the process. So I love it. I love watching it. But I cringe every time I see it. I'm just like, how is this guy going to play basically a 20 game season? That's hard to do.
He is. I mean, he does a lot of freakish things, obviously. I'm always amazed by his ability to move backwards quickly, where it looks like he's about to get hit and he can almost jump backwards and then accelerate forwards. It's remarkable. Is he as close to anything we've seen compared to Michael Vick?
Yeah, Michael Vick was the guy in our generation. He was that guy. But I think what really is intriguing about Lamar Jackson is he's got this amazing, and always has, even back to when he was put the quarterback in Louisville, he's got this amazing connection with tight ends. And a lot of times it's usually like quarterback, wide receiver, but Lamar Jackson and his tight ends, the numbers are just astounding. And so, you know, like I think like him and Mark Andrews, and, you know, I could be biased because Bobby Engram is the tight end coach there in Baltimore, but the numbers are really, really speak to it. And then you got the head coach that just believes in him. Like any fourth down, John Harbaugh is just like, hey, Lamar, you want to go for this? And Lamar's like, hey, you know, heck yeah, let's go. And they do it. And then it works almost because of, hey, I believe in you kind of thing. And
just how it was with you and Holmgren, right?
No, you know what it was? When he would get mad at me, he'd be like, all right, tough guy, fourth down. All right, we're going to just go for this right here. You got no choice. If you want to act like a superstar, you better play like one. So that put me in my place real quick.
If Michael Vick played today in this era rather than the era he played in, do you think he'd be much more successful with some of the new forms of offense and more open-minded coaches, et cetera?
I think the biggest change that you see is you've got this, you've kind of got like the RPO game, right? That's like a whole nother factor of it. So I think the team, the offense would be so much more successful. Like I look at Arizona right now. No one is running the ball more out of a four wide receiver set than Arizona. And they're able to do it because they basically are doing a pretend zone read. Like they're faking. You basically have to honor that they might do the zone read, even though they're really not running it much with Kyler. You have to have one or two guys kind of stay home. And now you've got James Conner, a tough physical runner, running inside. So I think that it's not necessarily that Kyler's numbers are going way up, but you have to honor the run. So like to your question about Michael Vick, I just think that the running backs that he would have played with, they would have had way better looks to run the ball, because those defensive end, those high-priced Michael Strahan type guys back then, who their only job was to rush the passer, they would have been a fish out of water sitting there like, okay, wait, now I'm outside contain on Michael Vick. I have to choose Michael Vick or commit to the run, and that would have been kind of a deal breaker for the style of play that some of those guys had. Reggie White, maybe even DeMarcus Ware, you know, great pass rushers, but it's just a different game there for outside rushers now.
You guys are going to have Buffalo on Monday night this week. Josh Allen is a player that confounds me, because when he came in, I thought he was terrible. I apparently am wrong, because he's been really good since then. But he's improved his accuracy during that time, and it's something Brock has always told me that you can't do. He said basically, you know, whatever your accuracy is, that's what it'll be. You can only improve it so much. And yet he seems to fly in the face of that.
Yeah, I'm not so much sure if it was like accuracy as much as it was he had no idea where to look. Like when I broke down his college tape at Wyoming, he had not played a ton of football in high school, or hadn't played like high level football, I should say. He was bigger, stronger, faster, and can throw the ball better than everyone he ever played against. But he never knew, like, he wasn't looking in the right spot. So, like, the closest thing I could, like, equate it to, you know, in terms of accuracy is, like, if you go out and golf at a really tough golf course, sort of just by yourself versus, like, the best caddy that knows the course. Like, if you're aiming at the wrong thing or you're looking at the wrong thing, I'm trying to put it by that tree, well, that's the wrong tree. You're gonna, you need to be over here. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, like, the equation. I think Josh Allen's a great example of, like, what can happen with a well-rounded athlete when he gets into a system with great coaching. I think Brian Daboll is one of the most underrated offensive coordinators in football. He'll be a head coach if he wants to be next year. And the job that he and Ken Dorsey have done, not only with accuracy, but just also understanding command at the line of scrimmage and how to pick up blitzes. I mean, really, there's not a quarterback better in the NFL at picking up the blitz with audibles at the line of scrimmage, at recognizing it as on the fly as it happens. He is he's as advertised. And, you know, I've said it many times, if it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers last year, I think Josh Allen would have been the MVP of the league.
It's remarkable. Honestly, I mean, I guess I was just wrong. I just watched him as a rookie and I saw a guy that didn't look like he belonged at the position. But I guess what you're saying is makes sense. If I'm I wish I could put a golf ball where I wanted to. Obviously, I can't. I proved that at Chelan Muni, certainly, over the weekend where I was. We don't need to talk about how that ended. But if I were just always aiming in the wrong spot, I would look like I don't belong there.
The golf course that makes perfect sense to me is Chambers Bay out near Tacoma.
We were there just 2 days ago. I brought Justin there for the first time.
You know, and like the caddy will be like, okay, put it right up here, you know, halfway there. You're like, what? No way. That's not right. I would never do that in a million years. And then you do what the caddy says, and it's like, oh, wow, you're spot on. And then you build that trust, and then now you're getting coached as you go. I think that's kind of what has happened to Josh Allen. He was just always the best athlete, just going out there doing it on his own. Hey, this feels right. I don't know. And now he's in just a really, really fertile soil in terms of a great coaching staff, really great wide receiver weapons. They've drafted well. The defense is good. Home field advantage. They got a really, really nice thing going in Buffalo.
Yeah, it's nice to have some of that stuff and not have to carry it entirely by yourself, which is, I think, a lot of what we've watched here with Russ over the last couple of years. As the talent level of the roster has gone down, the expectations for him have gone up.
Yeah, I mean, just one more thing on Buffalo, like to just like hammer home this point of like how much respect people around the league have for the coaching staff there. Mitchell Trubisky had an opportunity to go places and compete to be the starting quarterback from Chicago. They didn't do re-up him. He chose to go back up in Buffalo, where he knows he's very likely not going to play, just to get coached up to really hone his skills so that he can sort of like take two steps back and one step back and two steps forward to be ready to go as somebody's starter next year. You know, this is a guy that, you know, came out as the number two pick overall, went to a Pro Bowl, and then just kind of like struggled a little bit. But and it's just like, I think there's just like across the league a lot of respect for how Buffalo does things offensively.
Good stuff. All right, more of Matt Hasselbeck coming up in a moment. As I said, he's been working on his list all day. He's ready to rank the most freakishly athletic players he saw here. Will any of them measure up to Lamar Jackson? You'll have to stick around and find out. It's Matt Hasselbeck Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
Yeah, Matt, you know the bloom has come off your rose. You're getting attacked finally by the text machine, which I like. 425 says, actually, Matt, I think the best way for Trubisky to get back to being a starter is to not let anyone see him play, which might end those chances.
Wow. Okay. I'll keep the receipts on that one, but okay. I love Trubisky Earl Thomas believer. There. To be honest, that list was really biased. My list is biased, too.
Good. It should be. So most freakishly athletic players that you saw while you were here in Seattle, this is based on Lamar Jackson just being just otherworldly athletic and watching him on Monday night. Who were the five most athletic freaks you played with?
When I think Lamar Jackson, I was going to say Robbie Toback, number five, but I can't follow Lamar Jackson with Robbie Toback.
No.
I mean, he was our center, but was recruited as a basketball player, you know, a 300-pound dude who, like, you can see dunk a basketball, who's not very tall, but he won't make the top five. Number five, I'm going to go with Walter Jones instead. Walter Jones was 325 pounds, they would say, left tackle, but we would watch him, the younger version of Walter Jones. He was so amazing. His footwork was wrong. His technique was wrong. And yet he won every block, run game, pass game. Walter Jones would push Cadillacs in the offseason as his workout programs. Didn't lift weights. He would just push his own Escalade. That's what he did in the offseason. So he's my number five.
All right, number four.
Number four. Okay, this is kind of weird, but this is a true story, okay? The guy on our team that could throw the ball the furthest when I was the quarterback for the Seahawks was our backup running back, Maurice Morris from Oregon, the Oregon Duck. Maurice Morris could throw the football 80 yards. He used to bet people after practice, you think I could throw it 80 yards? They'd be like, heck no. And this dude would throw it 80 yards. Jeez. Wasn't a great passer. Like, we couldn't do halfback passes with him or stuff like that. But in terms of how far can I just throw it, like a javelin, Maurice Morris was
like,
amazing.
Like Kyle Bowler.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. Great call.
All right, number three.
Number three, we had this wide receiver named Jeremy Urban. Went to Division III Trinity. Mm-hmm. Wide receiver. Fastest guy on the team every year that he was on our team. But, funny thing, he was actually stronger than all of our tight ends as well. I mean, it was just really unbelievable, the ability that this guy had. And really didn't even play a lot of college football. He was a track guy, track star. And he's actually now the head football coach down at his school at Trinity University. But we used to play this game called Ultimate Football in the offseason. It's kind of like Ultimate Frisbee, but you play it with a football, and you play it, you know, at the football facility there. There's 200-yard fields next to each other, and he was always the first guy drafted, always, in Ultimate Football. He was just like this well-rounded athlete. And it was him or another guy, always the top pick. But, you know, again, on and off our practice squad, but you would take that guy any day of the week in Ultimate Football.
So we got Walter Jones, Maurice Morris, Jeremy Urban, number two.
Number two, a guy I think Seahawks fans know, John Ryan, the punter. Listen, you don't normally think of the punter as this, amazing athlete, but John Ryan absolutely was. He was a third round pick into the CFL draft as a wide receiver and a punter. In college, he's got a record for an 109-yard touchdown catch. Like, how do you even do that? It's from Canada, so, you know, maybe there's different rules up there that I'm not fully aware of, but John Ryan, he had that unbelievable fake field goal in one of the big playoff games for Seattle, but John Ryan, punters don't get enough credit. He certainly... Great, I'm talking great athlete.
I got a quibble. That's the same guy who ran the fake punt and then fumbled and got clocked. You remember John Ryan, the fumble running down the field? That was not an athletic moment.
It's kind of like saying, is Carl Lewis a great athlete? You know what I mean? Like, he's not great at throwing the ball. Throwing the ball is kind of like, there's some non-athletes that are good at throwing the ball.
Okay.
But, like, in terms of just, like, shocking speed, I should say.
Okay. I think he shocked himself on that play. He was running too fast to hold on to the ball. But he is number two ahead of some wide receivers and Walter Jones. Who is the number one freak athletic player you played with here in Seattle?
Number one, no question, my guy, Seneca Wallace. I mean, Seneca was my backup quarterback for most of the time that he was in Seattle. But there was a play in the 2005 NFC Championship game where we put him in to run a slant and go on their best corner, which was a huge play for us. We scored, I think, maybe on the next play. But he was not only a great talent at quarterback. In 2008, we had, you know, basically a bunch of, like, I would say wide receiver talent wasn't what it always was. Seneca Wallace, like, goes into the coach's room and he's like, hey, if that's who you're going to put out there at wide receiver, let me play wide receiver. And he was going to be our starting X receiver in the game that week, and he popped his calf in pregame because I think he was just probably running too much and he hadn't been doing that. But Seneca Wallace, again, another Ultimate Football superstar, Hall of Fame at Ultimate Football over there in Kirkland at Northwest University. Incredible, incredible athlete. Probably, if he was playing in today's football, would just be a star. But, you know, he was born too early, I guess.
Well, I'm surprised no Joey Galloway on this list.
Well, Joey Galloway and I never played together.
Oh, okay.
I was part
you
of that. He got traded, and those trip, those draft picks kind of brought me to Seattle.
Got
so
it.
I do know Joey, but now he's not on this top five.
Were you not there when Brock ran the 40 without his shirt on? Because I was told that was one of the most athletic moments people had seen at the facility.
Brock's running technique was very much like Steven Seagal in every Steven Seagal movie. Like it's very, very, it's
overacted.
Yeah.
It's great form running. Brock was good in the weight room. There was one exercise. I won't mention what exercise it was, bench press, but he was not good at, but he was unbelievable at just about everything else.
His running
squat was amazing. You know, incline was great, just not the bench. I don't know why.
I worked out with Brock one time in Arizona after we'd known each other for years. The first time I ever started to respect him, I was like, oh, this guy really was a pro athlete. Maybe I should shut my mouth and stop making fun of him for being a backup quarterback all those years.
No, he actually is a really amazing athlete, as is his wife, and that's no surprise why his kids and really all the Hewards are amazing athletes.
Let's see. Some texters suggesting Corin Robinson, Earl Thomas, Sean Springs.
Yeah, Shay, listen, Sean Springs easily could have made that list. Yes, Sean Springs is outstanding. But you know what knocked him off the list? There was a wild card game. We're playing Washington. And I don't know how. This is like little Giants. It can only happen one time out of 100. I outran Sean Springs to the corner of the end zone for a sliding touchdown. So had that play never happened, he might have been number one.
Right.
Because I saw what he did at Ohio State. But I don't know. I just something about that just threw me off a little bit.
There you go. Matt, thank you. It was a good time as always. Thank you for putting everybody back in a good mood. We needed it this week after Russell's injury and the loss, 2-3. We'll see if they can get it done with Geno on Sunday, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Let's go, Geno. Let's get it done.
Right,
thanks,
there
guys.
Go. There you go. There's Matt Hasselbeck every Wednesday from 9 to 10. And you can find that online at 710sports.com or go subscribe to the podcast. Jake and Stacy coming up next. We'll be with you guys tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Jerry DePoto will join me at 8:30. Lots to look forward to. Talk to you then. See ya.